Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week, our guest is a Democratic challenger for the 2nd District, Congressional District in Nebraska, Denise Powell. Now, remember, we love taking your questions, so write to politicswarroom@gmail.com for next week's show. We'll get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can also get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. So tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And please check out the links to our sponsors, Casper, HERS, WL, and Superpower, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting these sponsors. It really helps make this podcast happen. James, we have both said throughout this year that the left, the Democratic Socialists, really are not in ascension. They're not dominating the Democratic Party. They win almost exclusively in deep blue urban areas, New York, Philadelphia, Denver, getting elite white liberal votes. And the vast majority of Democrats in Congress and congressional candidates are moderates, or what I like to call Pelosi progressive Democrats. But, and this is a huge but, in the next 2 weeks, next Tuesday and a week from Tuesday, the next actually 11 or 12 days, a Democratic Socialist could win the Michigan Senate primary and the following week the Wisconsin gubernatorial primary. If successful, I think both of these candidates, certainly El Said in Michigan, are a likely loser in November. But even more important, it could create problems for other Democrats with a hyped-up narrative that the left is taking over the Democratic Party. So I think these are two elections that really do pose problems for what otherwise is a good Democratic year.
I agree. And the problem with El Said and the Wisconsin is what happens in the Michigan Democratic primary doesn't stay in the Michigan Democratic primary. What happens in the Wisconsin Democratic primary for governor doesn't stay in Wisconsin. And they're going to be tagged as part of the Democratic Party. Now, one of the things I've heard bigger, the Democratic Socialists of America run against Democrats. Why don't you get another name? Why are you dragging our name through the mud with your bullshit? And if you don't like it, call yourself something else. But why do you, and by the way, the name, the Democratic name is a great name. You know, North Korea is the Democratic Republic of North Korea, all right? Anybody can appropriate the name, but they appropriating the name is confusing people. And if you're so against everything, then create your own name. Don't use our name. Don't be tainted. But I got to tell you, I hope that voters in the primaries in Michigan and Wisconsin understand you're not just voting for a nominee for Senate in Michigan. You're not just voting for a nominee or governor of Wisconsin. You're voting on the image of the entire party. And there's a lot at stake here. And this is not time for a vanity vote. Not at all. And that's what this is, a vanity vote and nothing more.
Yeah, you know, when the police, after the terrible killing in Minneapolis in 2020, Floyd killing, a lot of the left called for defunding the police. Most Democrats did not. Very few did. But, you know, it's a label that stuck with many because of that. And I think this is many of the labels that El Said in Michigan and the woman in Wisconsin and the congressional candidates in New York, including some of the crazy stuff they've said, is going to be the Republicans will try to apply it to other Democrats. I'm not sure they can get away with it, but at least I think it's a danger. Now, I will criticize the establishment Democrats in Michigan in that the mainstream candidate, Haley Stevens, quite frankly, James, is just not a very good candidate. And that's the one they settled on. I always thought Mallory McMurrow, who did not run a good campaign, she tended to really want to be on MS Now than anything else. I still thought she had the potential to be a better candidate. But, you know, that's yesterday. And right now, if Democrats and Michigan understand the critical need this year is to take back the Congress, ideally the Senate, as well as the House, they're not going to vote for El Said.
Well, all right, first off, I don't know what the Democratic establishment is, but the reason that Mallory couldn't run and Haley could is, well, she was just beating her in the polls. And it became evident that...
Well, it had to do with money and Schumer and labor unions and all that.
I just think maybe Haley Stevens was a better fit than Mallory was for a Michigan Democratic voter. I mean, it's pretty clear one was kind of blue-collar. You know, it was more suburban and a little bit more up to more educated wing. I don't know. But I mean, it's pretty clear that Democrats, having thought about it, decided they wanted, or sufficient compared to Mallory, they wanted her to be the nominee. I don't think any level pulling or rigging had very much to do with it. Just that the nature of her appeal was different and probably more lucrative to a Michigan Democrat. But the problem we face with now in Wisconsin, this candidate doesn't want to defund the police, wants to abolish the police. So if we had a Republican gubernatorial nominee in the state of, I don't know, Colorado, pick a state, Tennessee, that was advocating lunacy of this level, and this is lunacy of the highest level you can imagine, we would be totally justified in taking that message nationally. We would be totally justified in saying, you got to ask these people when they make an appearance, or you talk to them, you hunt them down, if they agree with us. Well, they're going to do that to us. And I got to say, it's not, you go to a person in a tight race, you go to Roy Cooper, you go to John Ossoff, you go to the Troy Jackson, and you said, your nominee in Wisconsin said this. How do you answer that? That's not a chicken shit question at all. And you're just opening yourself up for all of that crap.
Well, James, you know, you are right on the one hand, but for reasons that are a little bit hard to explain, it doesn't work that way. And I'll tell you why. The Christian nationalists are a much bigger element in the Republican Party than the Democratic Socialists are in the Democratic Party. But you know something? Other candidates just don't get hit with that label as much. I'm not exactly sure why, but you look at the size of the Christian nationalists, including some in your state of Louisiana, and somehow that doesn't seem to affect those candidates who are running in Ohio or New Jersey or Pennsylvania, those Republican candidates. I don't think that's fair. But I do think that's what is.
Oh, true. And it's still going to come down to this. When Trump says stupid things, there's 100 videos of Republicans running the hall and, oh, I hadn't seen what he said, I hadn't read it. I mean, it for whatever reason, you're correct. But that 15% of our party could end up with a gubernatorial and a senatorial nominee in two of the most important states in the United States. That's what's kind of at stake here. And they could say, well, you know, yeah, Ian Gabe, what about ism? What about your nominee in Wisconsin, a critical state, a state that Democrats would take pride in, and Ben Wickler and all of the great things that are going on there? This is what you're stuck with. I wish people would think before they vote. I really do.
Yeah, I do too, because I think these next 10 days are going to be very important ones for the Democrats. I don't think it's necessarily going to change the fact that it's going to be, you know, a good year. But I think you're right. I think a lot of candidates are going to be unfairly labeled with some of this stuff. So I'm trying to think. You mentioned the Colorado gubernatorial candidate. I think he's the one who has said that he once killed a man when he was, I think, a kid, but he won't tell us who. And He claims he's led all kinds of missions to go after ICE people, but apparently and rescue kidnapped girls, but there's no record of it. So I want to find out how many Republicans are going to get labeled with this with this 7-year-old killer.
Yeah, I don't know the guy. He beat my good friend, my competitor, was actually from Mark.
That was Democrat who beat a Democrat.
Oh,
a good
we're
candidate.
Talking a Republican nominee. Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I would have been for Michael Bennett, but the guy that did it.
I know, but what they're going to say is, oh, it's just a Republican in Colorado. Who cares? We should care. But a Republican in Colorado is not the equivalent of a Democrat in Wisconsin.
No, it's not, but it should be.
I, maybe it should, but between now and Election Day, that's what we're faced with.
Yeah.
We're faced with this reality. Look, we could go back in the way it should be and how inherently unfair that we pay a bigger price for 15% of our part and they pay for 65% of theirs. All true, but it ain't going to get sorted out between 9 and November.
Yeah. You know, James, let me turn to another subject. You know, MAGA is seeking to destroy not just everyone who they think is an enemy now, but any of the previous ones. They want to rewrite the past. Their latest target is Dr. Anthony Fauci. He's the head of the of infectious diseases at NIH. He really is one of the most valuable public servants, I think, that America has ever seen. He was the chief government official during the COVID crisis at Donald Trump's request. Now, MAGA is out to destroy him. Did he make a few mistakes during the worst global pandemic in a century? Sure, he did. Who didn't? Did he try to protect us from a president who at one point wanted us to drink, wasn't Clorox, but something like Clorox? Yes, he did, thank God. Did he assiduously court the press? Absolutely. By the way, so did Lindsey Graham. Are they upset about that? One former Trump official, this really gets me, James, a Dr. Brett Giroir, I think, was in HHS and then came back for a while here. This Trump guy criticizes Fauci for a lack of transparency and narcissism. A Trump guy criticizing someone for narcissism, really. Finally, Senator Rand Paul, who himself can be crazy, had a clown show and wouldn't even let Fauci's attorney sit at the witness table. I don't know that I've ever seen that before. So this is just an effort to rewrite history. And Tony Fauci made mistakes, but boy, he did an awful lot of good for America.
What mistake did he make? Okay, people will say he advised people against wearing masks. His answer is actually pretty good. We had a shortage of masks. We didn't want to create more demand because medical professionals didn't have masks. What did he get wrong?
He didn't get very much wrong. A few things he says himself he would have taken back.
I don't know that he did anything wrong. I really don't. The mask argument, I saw it. I read his answer. I'm convinced that I would have given the same answer if I was him. But the thing is, you look at everything released, and I see this, five things we learned. The main thing we learned from the release of his personal texts or emails or whatever it was, is we didn't fucking learn anything. This was basically an honest guy trying to deal with a once-in-a-millennium public health issue who did, by the way, there is no evidence that he tried to make any money off of it. There was no evidence. He recommended one thing or another for everything you do. But I don't think the guy really made any mistakes. And I think the biggest mistake, the headline mistake he made, was totally justified by his answer. But whatever it is, this was the most ordinary release of things, and he was like, he had friends. He liked some people better than other people. Oh my God, we can't have that. Or he asked Chuck Todd for advice on how to deal with Tucker Carlson. I talk to my friends all the time and ask them advice how to deal with it. My point is, there ain't nothing there. In the big story, it should be Fauci releases all emails and texts, and we discover that water's wet. But we can't do that. We got to think of something. He had dinner with Jay Tapp. Okay, had dinner with Jay Tapp.
Well, they will go after him because he took the Fifth Amendment. He would have been crazy not to.
Well, they said Biden gave him a preemptive.
Biden gave him a preemptive pardon for what would have been the phony charges they would have brought against him when he was in government. And now they're looking for some way to catch him in what they'll call a misrepresentation. This is the Justice Department that sought to indict members of Congress, all who had served their country, for saying that members of the military should not obey an illegal order. The only reason they weren't indicted because a grand jury told the Justice Department to buzz off. They refused to do it, which rarely happens. This is the same Justice Department that indicted FBI Director James Comey, former FBI Director, for taking a picture of numbers drawn in the sand. This Justice Department, whether it's headed by Trump's loyal servant Todd Blanche or another lackey, will do whatever the emperor wishes. And if anyone advised Tony Fauci not to take the Fifth Amendment, that'd have been crazy.
So it's way worse than that. And let's forget about Rand Paul. Let's take Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana, who I've liked personally. He's a highly educated man. He's a highly trained attorney. And he said, and Rand Paul said, we want you to testify because we lay in a perjury trap for you. We're going to try to ask you every question that you can, and we're going to try to make a culpable case of perjury in reference to a prosecutor. The lawyer, gee, what would you say if you were... That's why I'm not going to say anything. I have a constitutional right. I'm going to exercise Senator Kennedy. Senator Kennedy, I ask you one question. If he were your client, and he was called before a committee with the express purpose of setting a perjury trap, would you advise him to testify? And you're too good a lawyer, you're too well-trained a lawyer to not know to answer that. Rand Paul, I don't know if he knows what fucking time it is. But you say, you're coming here, we're setting a perjury trap, and if you don't walk into it, then we're going to blame you. And the lawyer says, well, I don't think I want to walk into a perjury trap.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, it's just one more. Tony Fauci will be remembered as a great public servant who did a lot of good. And, we can quibble about whether he made a small mistake or not, but boy, he did a lot of good, and he was a great patriot. And Rand Paul is crazy. And I'll tell you something, John Kennedy, you're right, he's well educated, but you know what, James, he's a fool. He is a fool.
I think he plays one on TV. I'm
well, sure. That's what he is.
But the idea that you publicly said they're trying to set a perjury trap.
Yeah.
They didn't say we want to find out what the truth is here. Mm-hmm. Or we want to see if we, here I am, a Rhodes Scholar, Vanderbilt educated, United States Senator, was former
was
state
he a
treasurer.
Rhodes Scholar?
It was none of that.
Was Kennedy really a Rhodes Scholar? I know
I think I know he went to Oxford. I think he was a Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah.
But I know he's Oxford educated. I know he's a highly, highly educated man. Whether he was a Rhodes Scholar or a Fulbright Scholar.
Yeah, no, your point's right. And I still think he's a fool.
He plays a fool on TV. And I think he does that because he assumes that the people that vote for him are fools, and maybe he's right.
Yeah, well.
Sleep your best on the Casper. Oh, shit, after this surgery, it's good to have a good mattress, but no matter what, even if you're not recovering from surgery, you're going to spend hopefully 8 hours a day on a mattress. This is the most time you're going to come into contact with anything else during the course of your day. Why not have the best one? You certainly would want to have the best chair. You certainly would have an air-conditioned room or a heater in your room. Why wouldn't you have the best mattress when it's available to you and you can get it for the price you can get it on this show?
Yeah, and as you often point out, what's important to every human being is sleep. And when it comes to sleep, Casper is a brand that you can trust. This podcast is sponsored by Casper. Casper makes reliable, high-quality mattresses designed to deliver consistent, comfortable sleep night after night. That's why out of 99 mattresses, Consumer Reports named Casper's the one mattress their top-rated all-foam mattress of 2026. And, you know, that really is a big deal. So if you've been talking about getting a new bed, now's the time with Casper's back-to-school sale. Head to Casper.com and save up to 20% on the mattress you deserve. Casper's mattresses are built to be durable and for long-lasting comfort, so you don't have to replace your mattresses every few years. They offer a wide range of mattress types, so whether you like your mattresses firm, soft, or somewhere in between, there's something for you at Casper.com. Plus, they just launched a brand new kids mattress, so even your youngest sleepers can get the same comfort and quality that you do. Too many of us have put off upgrading our mattresses for way too long. I know we have. Because as soon as you lie down on a Casper mattress, you'll want to wake up in one for life. James, I don't know if you're on a Casper mattress, but I worry we'll never get you back if you are. They're fantastic. And we've heard so many other people share similar stories of how much more rested they feel in the mornings. So if you're going to invest in your home, there's nothing better than investing in a Casper. But as a word of warning, you will have to get up eventually. I want you to hear that, James Carville. Casper has a 100-night risk-free trial. But with over 110,000 five-star reviews, we're sure you're going to love it also. Remember, the day always ends well with Casper. Right now, save up to 20% on mattresses and up to 25% on everything else when you go to Casper.com one last time. That's CASPER.com and save up to 20% on the mattresses you deserve. The link is also in our show notes. James, our guest is Denise Powell, the Democratic candidate, Nebraska 2, centered in Omaha and Douglas County. It's a swing district that has been represented for the past 10 years by Republican Don Bacon, who's retiring. Ms. Powell, a small businesswoman and political consultant, won a multi-candidate primary. Democrats consider this a must-win race. First, thanks for joining us. Let me ask you this, Denise Powell. What are you primarily focusing on? The economy, tariffs, healthcare, the Iran war?
See all of the above. I mean, the affordability issue is huge, and that looks really different for a lot of people. But probably the thing I spend the most time talking to folks about at the doors, not events, is healthcare. The state of healthcare right now is really, really scary for folks. But it's all of it, right? It's compounding. It's the cost of groceries and gas, and the fact that, you know, most people can't get an appointment with their doctor, the fact that so many people in our community have lost access to their healthcare, the cost of housing. Nebraska has the highest gap in the country in the cost of childcare and the median household income. So our families are just really struggling. Our farmers are struggling. Our small business owners are struggling. And they don't see any relief coming from Washington, D.C. anytime soon.
You know, the affordability issue is not a good one for Republicans. So I think we know the game plan. They are going to look, particularly if a couple Democratic socialists win big races, they're going to try to paint all Democrats as left-wingers who've been captured by Democratic socialists. How are you going to answer that?
Spot on. I think you're absolutely right. Republicans know that their policies are not popular. So those are the attacks. And look, I'm not a Democratic socialist. Not only am I a mom and a small business owner, but I'm the daughter of immigrants who fled communism in Chile and in Cuba. And they came here because they believed in this American dream. And I think right now, especially in a state like Nebraska, people here are, they're common sense, pragmatic people. They just are looking for change that makes sense. And again, I just had a breakfast this morning with a group that included Republicans and Democrats, and people are worried about a lot of the same things. You know, they're worried about their Social Security and they're worried about their health care. They're worried about the corruption, and maybe they see it as a bigger, broader issue in politics as a whole, but they get it. They get that people in D.C. seem to be doing well while they are struggling, and they're really frustrated. And I think if we can just give them a message that resonates about trying to solve for the things that make people's lives easier and better so that they can go and do whatever it is that success looks like to them, I think that resonates with folks.
Let me ask you to answer a charge. The Republicans, noting you're a successful fundraiser, refer to you as Dark Money Denise. They say that you rejected support from a pro-Israeli group, but then it was funneled to another entity, which backed you. So just, you know, tell me about the Dark Money Denise charge.
Our primary was amazing, and it was bananas, the amount of support that we got. But I will tell you that a lot of that outside spending came from groups like Emily's List, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, Elect Democratic Women. And one of the things that I've done in my professional life, I founded basically the Nebraska version of Emily's List. So I've been working with those folks for years to help get good candidates elected to office. It is not a surprise that a group like that would be invested in my race, in the opportunity to elect the first woman ever in the history of Nebraska to this seat. It is not surprising that the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, in this moment where, in particular, you know, Latino immigrants are being vilified, would want to see a Latina in this seat as well. So we had a lot of outside support, but we also had a lot of grassroots support. We had thousands and thousands and thousands of grassroots donors. I would get, you know, crisp $2 bills from farmers out in the western part of our state saying, like, wish I could do more, but I'm rooting for you. We've just built a really, really broad coalition of support.
And you wouldn't take money from AIPAC?
We're not taking money or endorsements from any group in that space. I think it's really important to stay independent on this issue. So no, haven't taken any money, endorsements from AIPAC or J Street or DMFI or anybody else in the space.
Let me ask you about it, you know, which is a unique situation to Nebraska. You have a Senate race. There's no, the Democrat who won dropped out, but right. There's a very strong independent candidate, Dan Osborne, running against the Republican incumbent, Pete Ricketts.
Yeah.
Tell us the outlook and have you endorsed one of those candidates?
No, I mean, I know Dan really well, and I'll tell you right now, Dan Osborne has my vote in November.
I think you just endorsed him, but that's okay.
But there you go. Whatever. I'm voting for Dan Osborne. I don't think that was a big secret, though. I'll tell you that. You know, I think what's exciting is that there is a real movement to elect real human beings right now. And I think that's how Dan presents. In particular, he's running against Pete Ricketts, who is a billionaire, who is not necessarily the most popular guy here. He's in lockstep with the administration. And Dan is who Dan looks to be. You know, he's a mechanic. He's a hardworking guy. He's a labor guy. He's a dad. He's a good egg. He's running a hard race. And we have a lot of exciting races in Nebraska. We have a really competitive gubernatorial race here. Half our state legislature is up for reelection. There's a lot going on in Nebraska in 2026. And I think there's just going to be a lot of energy. Obviously, you know, I'm at the top of the ticket, which is a great sense of responsibility. But I think that our campaigns, Dan's campaign, Lynn Walz's campaign for governor, I'm hoping that that's going to be a real rising tide and make a lot of change in Nebraska up and down the ballot.
James Carville.
So, you're in a, as I understand it, explain to people, you're in a kind of blue dot. You're basically an urban district centered in Omaha. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But do Omaha, like everybody else in Nebraska, is very dependent on the agrarian economy.
100%.
Explain to our listeners what's going on in agriculture today, and why is this particular sector, you know, where everybody's suffering, you know, small businesses are suffering, restaurants are suffering, but why is agriculture particularly vulnerable right now, and why is it important that agriculture have an advocate in Washington?
Oh my gosh, thank you for asking that question. So this district has Omaha, and it's the most, you know, urban part of the state, but we also have Saunders County, which is a more rural part of the district. So I am talking to a lot of farmers, and they're all getting hosed right now. I mean, the tariffs have totally screwed we grow corn and soybean here in Nebraska. Talking to farmers who are selling their soybeans at a loss, talking to farmers who are still angry about the bailout in Argentina. Our ranchers were still stung by that. Right now, this war in Iran is jacking up the cost of diesel and fertilizer, which is problematic, not just for the farmers, but for everybody involved in the agrarian economy, the trucks who bring the food in and out. It's really causing a lot of issues. And on top of that, you have to remember that a lot of these small family farms, they operate like a small business. And so a lot of these folks are on the ACA. And not only are they selling their product at a loss, not only has the cost of all their inputs gone through the roof, but on top of that, their healthcare costs are doubling and tripling. And so we're seeing a huge influx in farm bankruptcies. We're seeing rates of farmer suicide increase. And the thing about a city like Omaha is that I have a lot of buddies here in Omaha who grew up on the family farm out west, who still have family running farms out west. So we are deeply connected to our agrarian roots in Nebraska. And I think when folks see that farmers in our community are hurting, it really impacts everybody. It is a huge, huge problem, and one that I don't know that folks really have done anything to tackle.
Yeah, your banks lend to farmers, your insurance companies insure farmers. You're very dependent. You may have a lot of farmers, but you're really dependent on what happens in agrarian
America. Yes. It's a huge economic driver for the state. And when that economy is depressed, along with all the other things that we're seeing, you know, hospitality and all the other into manufacturing, all the other industries that we're seeing, it's really costing a lot. And people feel it. People feel it. Sure. And again, this is it's part of who we are as a state. And when our farms aren't doing well, I think people really
have one of the unique things about Omaha, there are many things I like, but, you know, being an LSU guy and a Baton Rouge guy. Baton Rouge and Omaha have a really tight relationship. And how important is the College World Series to the image, the economy? Is that, what is the role that that one event every June plays in your city?
It is huge. And shout out to the LSU fans, because whenever they come, they are always the most fun. I will say that. They're the most fun fans.
I imagine they have a drink or two.
A couple.
A lot of time across the river gambling.
They are huge. No, it is awesome. It is huge because I think it exposes people to Omaha. And, you know, Omaha is a city that punches above its weight class. I mean, truly, like, we are an amazing city. We have an incredible culture of philanthropy. So we have facilities in this city that are so amazing. We're so lucky to have them here. We have incredible schools. We have incredible communities. We have small business. We have art. We have a tech community. We have so much to be proud of in Omaha. We love to show it off. And the College World Series is an awesome, awesome opportunity to show it off to the world.
Also, some of the best Italian restaurants in the United States in the home. You know, go figure. I never would.
Go figure. We have, Omaha is a city made up of immigrants. We had so many Italian immigrants and Chinese immigrants and Mexican immigrants and Irish immigrants that came to this city because of the railroad. So we have an amazing, it's a really diverse place.
I'm done asking you these blistering questions, Albert.
I love these hard-hitting questions. James Carville.
I'm gonna be just as hard hitting. The other thing you're noted for is the home of the Oracle, Warren Buffett.
That's right.
Do you ever see Warren Buffett, and has he taken a position in your campaign?
You know, Warren does so much for this community, and his leadership. You know, I talked about having that incredible philanthropic community here. A lot of that has been led by example. Warren has led by example. He doesn't do too much on the political side, but I do get to see him out and about every now and then at lots of different events for all the causes that he supports. He's been a huge supporter. He and his family, his children are equally active in this community, and they have done amazing things. We have incredible medical institutions with the family's names on them. They do so much with our public schools. They're amazing humans, and Omaha's lucky to have the Buffetts in it.
Denise Powell, Nebraska several years ago, talking about the state, had a significant budget surplus. Today, it's got a pretty deep deficit. What happened, and what lessons, if any, are there for the federal government?
I think that is a really good question, and I think that we have seen that our state government has made a lot of sort of questionable choices that have gotten us to where we are here. I think some of the lessons are investing in the right things, investing in the right priorities. And this is sort of my concern at the federal level right now when we talk about things like cutting access to Medicaid and SNAP and all of these issues that lift up our families, when we are instead choosing to prioritize foreign wars, when we're instead choosing to prioritize ballrooms and whatnot, retrofitting Qatari jets, while people are struggling, I think it just goes to show that we are not focused on the right things, that we are not making investments on the things that matter. That's the conversation that I have every day. And people see it. They get it. They see that folks in D.C. seem to be getting richer while they're struggling to make ends meet, while they're struggling to put food on the table and fill up their gas tanks. And they're really very frustrated by it, both at the state level and at the federal level. And I think government needs to do better, quite frankly, and that's across the board.
But do you agree to address the problems in Washington? So, you know, the same problems you have in Nebraska, you have to increase taxes. And if so, which taxes would you increase?
Sure. I mean, I think we need more. A lot of the problems stem from our tax policy. I think we need a more progressive tax policy. I think we need to be making sure that we are giving tax breaks to the folks who need them and not giving tax breaks to the top. I think that all of these Medicaid cuts and all of the things that the Big Beautiful Bill did was all to make sure that the billionaires had tax breaks. And it's just not equitable, it's not fair, it's not necessary. And people here are really feeling it now. So I do think that we need to revisit tax policy. I think we need to look at a lot of things. I think we need to look at how we're funding Social Security. I think we need to look at removing the cap on Social Security. I think we need to really rethink the way that we're investing in our people and the way that we're investing in our systems.
You just warmed James Carville's heart by talking about removing the cap on Social Security.
Oh, God, I could jump through this thing and kiss just a single best idea that exists in the United States today.
Yeah.
And by the way, Bernie Moreno is fine.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Yeah.
He and Elizabeth Warren did an op-ed in New York Times. I don't know why no one picked up on them.
That's fascinating.
All right. It's a bipartisan proposal.
It's a bipartisan proposal. Yeah. I mean, I'm a sandwich generation kid. I'm worried about my parents and my in-laws and my kids.
$3 trillion over 10 years. Hey,
that's
even by Warren Buffett standards, that's a lot of money.
That's right.
Tell me this before I let you go. Well, first of all, we thank you a lot for being with us. You made it clear you're going to vote for Dan Osborne.
One takeaway from this interview?
No, a little bit more. Carville's threatening to kiss you. I mean, we have some things in here. But how would you assess that Ricketts-Osborne race right now?
I feel good about it. I think that there's going to be a lot of big change in Nebraska. I feel really good about our race. We're a lean Democrat seat. This race is being looked at as the top flip opportunity in the country because it's one of three seats where Kamala Harris won in 2024, but the Republican incumbent held their seat. And it's the only seat that the Republican incumbent is retiring from. So top flip opportunity here, which I think is hopefully going to have a really good effect and lift everybody up. And I think Dan's got a great shot too. I'm excited for some of my friends running for the state legislature. I think people are hungry for change, and I think we're going to really bring it this year. And when we do big things in Nebraska, I think we kind of shock the world. So I'm really excited to be part of that change.
Well, we didn't even mention your opponent. I forget his name, but I will say the one that you are succeeding, Don Bacon, was one of pretty conservative, but one of the most respected Republican members in Washington. So, whatever it is, that gives you, I think, an added opportunity.
I have one more question.
Yeah.
I think you alluded to the fact that you're a Latina.
I am.
So just by your last name, but I don't have very good identity radar at all. I know you get it to me. But tell us a little bit about your background. I might be a little bit interesting, and maybe there's something to learn about you.
Yeah. So my mom is from Cuba.
Right.
My dad is from Chile.
From where?
Chile.
Okay, Chile. Okay.
Yep. They, great, beautiful country. They met and married in Miami, Florida. That's where I was born. Spanish was my first language. Learned to speak English in school. And I worked in communications, corporate communications for years. I worked in Miami. I worked in New York. I worked in Los Angeles. And when I was in Los Angeles, I met my husband. And he came home from work one day when we'd been married for about 3 weeks and said, "Hey, crazy thing happened at work today, but what do you think about moving to Omaha, Nebraska?" And we moved here 17 years ago without knowing anybody in this state. And we did all of our adult first here. We bought our first house here and had our two kids here and adopted our first dog here. And we just fell in love with Nebraska. Moving here is the best decision we ever made. And I tell people, like, we found our little American dream here. And I worked to advocate for public schools, helped work on the campaigns to expand Medicaid and minimum wage, to keep public money in public schools. I advocated for reproductive rights and medical cannabis and paid sick leave, and then founded an organization to help get more women elected to public office across the ticket, top to bottom.
Great story. All right. Gold mine in Alaska. Small farm in Nebraska. That's where we all are.
Is there any kind of Hispanic vote in Omaha?
Yeah, Omaha has a big Hispanic community and one that's been here for a really long time. So they make up about 14% of the population here in Omaha.
Well,
and there are a lot of communities in Nebraska that are only growing because of immigrant populations. So we have a lot of Latinos in Nebraska.
Denise Powell, thank you so much for being with us.
The talent in the fucking party is just unbelievable.
Man, she's good, isn't she?
God damn, I mean, they all are. Set your goal with hers. Well, you know, go in an old folks home and see how many fat people you see there, but you don't take anecdotal evidence. Look at any kind of evidence that you can, in addition to the fact that when you lose weight, you just feel better, how much it affects your lifespan. Before you know it does, but you really know it affects the quality of your lifespan.
So, you know, if you've been waiting for the right time to tackle your weight loss goals, here it is. Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. The results are incredible, and it's an amazing and effective tool for you or those you care about. With Wegovy at Hers, you can lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss. That means no needles. Thank goodness. Everything is 100% online, and Hers connects you with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. Weight loss by Hers even goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget. If eligible, you'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Are you ready to reach your goals? Okay, here we go. Visit forhers.com/war room to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/war room. Again, for hers.com/war room. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is a registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. So to get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com. The link is also in our show notes. Now for the outrage of the week. The 7th Congressional District in Ohio has not been on any red to blue list. Trump carried it by double digits, and the incumbent won it by 15 points last time. But the incumbent is Max Miller. And I say this without any respect. He's a punk. His ex-wife has accused him of violent assault, throwing scalding hot water at her, holding a gun to her head and injuring the 2-year-old child. He denies it all and says it was all her fault. It would be hard to paint her as a left-winger out to do in MAGA Republicans. She's the daughter of the conservative Republican Senator Bernie Moreno. Moreover, Miller has a history of violent behavior. He was charged with assault, reckless driving, and being in a bar fight, punching out a glass door. Earlier in life, he was caught lying about his personal biography. And when he was a Trump aide, he was a Trump favorite. The president loves him. He dated Press Secretary Stephanie Grisham, who later he was accused of assaulting her. With similar physical abuse. He denied it, as he does now, and said it was all her fault. Sound familiar? I don't know the facts of the charges against Miller by his ex-wife, but his ugly record makes it exceedingly difficult to give him any benefit of doubt. The question is, can Republicans force him out of the race by next Wednesday, the deadline?
Well, it's not so much outrage, but it's part of outrage and part of an observation. This election should, and everything must be done to make it what I call an Old Testament election. That means it's about judgment. It's about judging the last 2 years. And it's not about whataboutism. It's not about anything else. But on the other hand, it is one party has had total control of American politics, American government, and American policy. The party that controls the executive branch, the Senate, the House, the Supreme Court, vast numbers of legislatures. And are we, ourselves as Democrats, are we going to allow this to be an election about whataboutism? Are we going to allow this to be, but on the other hand, election, or are we going to do everything we can to hold people in ultimate power to ultimate responsibility? That is hard to do. That is hard to do because you get somebody like a Max Miller. How do you not come in on him? You get it, or you see what they're doing to Dr. Fauci. It's outrageous. It's all of these things. But at the end of the day, everybody has to remember, and every candidate, this is not about a vision for the future. This is not about hope. This is not about anything. It is about, but one thing is rendering judgment. As Abraham Lincoln said, the judgments of the Lord are just. And if we don't properly make this election about judgment and then make it about retribution, we're making a big mistake. And it is an easy, easy thing to lapse into because there are all kinds of other things that are out there that are at varying degrees all true. But sometimes there is, in life, sometimes in people say in religion, they say things, there is an ultimate truth that exists. And the ultimate truth is you're being called to render judgment on total power that has been exercised in this country for coming on 2 years. Nothing else matters.
Yep. Amen.
Understand your health with superpower. Well, if you had something that was wrong with you and you knew you could fix it, why wouldn't you want to find out? And this is the exact thing that you can not only find out, you can find out at a really affordable price. You can find out from home. You can say, well, I need to address this. Maybe I need to ask about this. Or, you know what? I'm fine. I'm going to, in another 6 months, I'm going to look at myself again. And all of this at an unbelievably good price and convenient, like you can't even believe convenient. So people don't like to go to the doctor. They want to start in the waiting room. It's a disease pit. You go in there, it's impersonal. It puts you in line. All that's taken care of. Done.
Well, you sold me, James. Nobody wants to leave the doctors more confused than ever. We need data and a game plan. Enter Superpower. It's one simple blood draw with 100-plus biomarkers compared to 10 to 15 at a physical and unlocks real understanding of your body for years ahead. That's years ahead. We were amazed at how much you find out. Their app includes detailed info across 17 core systems, including heart, metabolism, thyroid, inflammation, and even environmental toxins, for insight on everything from disease prevention to optimizing your workouts. Even with a busy schedule, Superpower makes it easy. They can send a licensed professional to your home, or you can visit a nearby lab. Afterwards, you'll have answers to questions like, is my diet healthy, or am I sleeping well, and more, with their actionable health plans based on results. We have nutritional guidance, lifestyle and behavioral adjustments, and supplement or prescription suggestions viable directly from Superpower. You even get your true biological age that you can track over time. And let me just say, James and I officially have a youthful vibe, right, James? For sure.
Absolutely, man. I'm so glad my biological age is younger than my chronological age. Fool myself. This, why not?
You know, this is not a one-time snapshot. Superpower integrates your past medical history, old labs, and incorporates your family history with each test building in the last, so you can see progress over time. Plus, their on-demand clinician team answers questions so you know exactly what it all means without Google or an appointment. So stop reacting and start proactively improving your health based on personalized data. Hands down, it's the most advanced comprehensive system out there. Other services cost way more for way less. Superpower's high-end concierge-level care is HSA-FSA eligible with the best price on the market. So take control of your health with Superpower. For a limited time, our listeners can get $20 off to unlock their new health intelligence. Head over to superpower.com and use the code WARROOM for $20 off your $199 Superpower membership. And after you sign up, they'll ask you, how'd you hear about Superpower? Tell them Politics War Room sent you to support the show. The link is in the show notes. Okay, our first listener question, James, is from Rob in Hartsdale, New York, something you've actually talked about. He asks, why isn't climate change a bigger political issue? What kind of world are we leaving to future generations? Shouldn't religious people and others care about this?
It is a very good question to which I do not have a very good answer to. If you look at what's happening, this is a minor hobby of mine, and I recommend that people go to something called Mike's Weather Page. Don't ask me. It's some guy in Florida. There's no money involved, so I ain't getting a cut of anything. And I guess this guy gets, I don't know what, but it's most exhaustive of it. But would you, anybody that studies, there's a difference between studying climate and studying weather. I think what I'm talking about, to some extent, is weather. The temperature increases that are happening in Europe are something that you just never see. I'm talking about 5 degrees, breaking records. You look at Phoenix and you say, well, it's 119. Well, shit, or it's 120. Well, it's 119. It was 118 before. The fact that it's that hot in Phoenix, and you know, sure, there are more days, and if you count the number of days in Phoenix over 100 years compared to 920 years ago, it's breathtaking. What you're seeing is not a progression of numbers leading you toward an undesirable result. You're seeing a cascade of almost unimaginable numbers leading you toward a disaster that you can't imagine. And as long as we all have the tendency, well, it's always hot here, shit, it's hot in Louisiana, it's, you know, it's fucking July, what do you expect? Or it gets hot in Europe in the summer. But the variances in the increases that you're seeing here are I don't think anybody, not us, not climatologists, not people that cover climate, not weather people, really adequately can get out just how dramatic what's happening is happening. From my vantage point, is just an amateur with some passing interest, the numbers I'm seeing are just utterly staggering and unprecedented.
And it's not just in Phoenix or this country. We're going to take Judy and I are going to take a vacation in Europe, and we're going to take it in November.
Right. The temperature of the Pacific Ocean, it's like, it's not a tenth of a degree higher. It's like 3.5 degrees higher.
Right. David in Lakeview, Arizona, says, why has there not been a buzz about Jamie Raskin for president? He's done more than other politicians to hold Trump accountable for his misdeeds. Jamie Raskin hopefully will be the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. That's a perfect spot for him. He is a very well-credentialed, trained, smart lawyer. He's tough. He's got a good staff. And we need people who do important things in Congress. We have enough congressional candidates. So I'm very pleased that Jamie Raskin will be headed for that committee chair. And I think there'll be a number of other really strong presidential candidates before it's over. But let's focus first on 2026.
I agree. I think he's uniquely suited to run a congressional committee that is tilted toward aggressive investigations. I think he has the right background, the right experience, and the right skill for this. And I think it's a very patriotic position. I hope he just stays in that lane and doesn't endorse Democratic candidates from other states. Just do what you do best.
Yep, I agree. Brad, this is an interesting question. Brad in Paradise, Utah, says he is very much against the Save American Act, but have often wondered if fairly implemented, it might hurt Republican voters more than Democrats. He talks about women with changed names, and I'm guessing not many passports. Doesn't say whether they're more Democrats or Republicans. And wonders if we should compromise and just go with a voter ID and move on.
So I say, I'm glad this question came up because I want to explain something. I say things that are provocative, get oftentimes interpreted the wrong way. I can't clean them up. Said on this show, we're talking about policy in the Middle East, and it got convoluted to come out that I said something anti-Semitic. Of course, I said no such thing, and I didn't do anything about it because it was just stupidity. And it turned out it was just stupidity. Also, I said a week ago, in a mocking way, talking about how the DNC was a particular role. Maybe David Hogg ought to be the goddamn chairman. What I care. Of course, our own people, Simon, puts it out like I'm making a serious proposal when I'm actually doing no such thing. I'm actually mocking it. So everything is going to come out and be reported away. What I did say in Fox ran with it is, look, there's no voter fraud to speak of. It's an infinitesimal problem. It doesn't count as a problem. They have these laws that they want to pass that says voter ID. We have it. I don't think it has any effect on anything. As opposed to fighting the fight, shit, just make it part of a negotiated agreement that you give in on and you get a tax on Social Security that goes into infinity. I'd take that trade any day. But the problem of voter fraud, or the problem with that, is literally nil. I got to say, because you always got to say, there is some problem with it. It is not it is so small, you have to really squint and use a microscope to find it. But what I'm saying is, and people believe that, the facts are 1,000% different. But if you say we ought to just go ahead and agree with the driver's license, the photo ID thing, and go to something bigger, it's always going to be misinterpreted. I understand that. I can't correct it, but I'm just going to keep telling people on this show what I think, and we'll even misinterpret what I say ourselves.
You know, it's interesting. Brad, who asked this question, is from Paradise, Utah, and Trump and the Save Act are trying to do away with mail ballots. Right. Utah votes almost entirely by mail, and I haven't heard of an awful lot of fraud in Utah. No. Matter of fact, I haven't heard of any fraud in Utah. So,
what do? You mail a picture of your driver's license in? I think Utah, Colorado, Oregon.
Oregon, there's a whole bunch of states.
They're all 100%.
Right, and nobody says. I haven't heard anyone say that Mike Lee was elected because of fraud. You know,
okay.
I've never heard that.
It is stupid. But people hold the position for very stupid reasons. But I can't talk about 75% of the people in the country.
Right.
Okay, give it to you. Fuck it, I don't care.
John in Tempe, Arizona, said, would term limits fix some of the political problems we have in America, and it's an issue that has any chance of getting passed? John, I have opposed term limits when Democrats were in control of the Congress and many governorships. I oppose it now. I think there are too many old people who are staying in office, but I think that basically voters ought to make that choice. I think that if you have, you know, term limits, to be sure, you would get rid of a couple people who, more than a couple, who no longer belong in office. You also would have gotten rid of Nancy Pelosi. No, I'm not for term limits, but I'll tell you, I really want to bring... I am, by the way, would be certainly willing to consider an age limit for the Supreme Court. That is an appointed job, a lifetime job. But I think term limits for Congress, leave it to the voters.
I think it's one of these things. Remember when Ezra Klein said that Newt Gingrich was a stupid person's idea, what a smart person sounds like?
Right.
I don't mean this to our friend. I know that people, it gets out in the... First of all, the qualification for running for Congress, I think, was set in the original Constitution. You had to be 25 years old.
Right. Right. You have a minimum age.
But that was about it. Why do you need any more?
And a minimum age for the Senate, too.
It necessarily should be from the congressional district you represent. Everyone would know if you're not. If you're 25, tee it up and go, dude. And if you win re-election under the same rules that everybody else does, of all of the things that we got to intervene on, I agree with you vociferously. I think this is a false flag issue.
Yeah. James Quaid in Richmond, Virginia, notes that you have argued, he thinks convincingly, that Trump will resign after the midterms. He worries, however, this could be a diabolical trick. Will Trump try to run again in 2028 by distorting and falsely contextualizing the wording of the 22nd Amendment to say that he's entitled to serve for 10 years total?
So, there are two different questions. First of all, of all of the things that you have to worry about, Trump running in 2028 is not one of them.
Right.
Let me just... What I am saying is I'm watching him as a person that is 81. I'm watching him in real time. And I think this man is deteriorating physically and emotionally at a rate that's exponential. It's not linear. And I'm just saying, as an observer of this, and then when there was a good piece, I think it was in the Atlantic by a guy named Jonathan Lemure. I see him on morning show. Guy looks like he's smart. This is going to be accelerated by the fact that after November, he is going to be dealing with something he hadn't dealt with his time in politics. He's going to be irrelevant. He's not just going to be irrelevant. It's going to be people are not going to want to be around him. They're not going to care what he has to say. They're not even going to want to affirmatively hear it. And to the extent that I have any, everything I know, I still believe he will walk away prior to April 15th. I have assigned my reasons. I don't know if they'll be right or wrong, but I am more convinced after watching this fiasco with Senator Lindsey Graham, that he's deteriorating even quicker. This man cannot do the job. He's not physically up to it. He has problems of his own making that he doesn't know what to do. He's talking about bombing the fucking shit out of Iran. That's going to really move him. I think the guy is deteriorating at an accelerated rate and will continue to.
Yeah, yeah. Thomas in San Antonio, Texas, asked, when did Kamala Harris and her team know she was going to lose the election? Did she go into Election Day thinking she was going to win? Yes, everything I've read said she did think she was going to win. And some, not all, members of her team thought that. That was only one of many miscalculations that Kamala Harris made. And I must tell you, before I knock her for that, several days out, James and I were up at Fair Harvard doing a seminar. I thought she was going to win, too. I thought she was going to win not because I thought she was such a great candidate. I thought people had finally wised up to Trump's game. I was wrong, and so was she.
I think, I know in my instance, I was totally enamored with the Iowa poll. My experience with the Iowa poll had been very positive.
Right.
It had Harris up by 10 points on the weekend before the election. So I should get, but I hope that her staff thought she was going to win. You never go into any campaign, any election day with any thought other than you're going to win. And I mean, this thing has been dissected, been rerun, run again. Well, at the end of the day, we know what happened. But the fundamental question is, I think that the Harris campaign and affiliated entities spent $2 billion from Labor Day to Election Day. I think it's as likely as anything they didn't get a single vote on Election Day that they weren't going to get on Labor Day. If you wanted to do an exhaustive look back to 2024 and learn what lesson you could, you would ask, where did that money go? How much of it? And why was it so massively ineffective? Because we just assume that money is everything in politics, and that is a huge determinative factor. And I'm skeptical. And now Trump has, you keep reading these stories, he's, I don't know, got $1 billion. The RNC has $1 billion more than the DNC, this and that. I don't know that money is as big a factor in American politics as it is presumed by everyone to be. I really don't. And I don't see any good analysis of, I mean, obviously there's a certain amount, you know, you got to have enough for the ante. That I agree.
Right. As long as you compete.
Beyond that, I suspect the power of money in politics is overrated, or in electoral politics.
Yeah.
In electoral politics is overrated.
This is the second cousin of that. Maria in St. Louis, Missouri says she's donated to candidates through Act Blue Online. This has resulted in constant donation requests from candidates all over the country on a daily basis. The constant text, even after the elections, were totally overkill to the point that I don't want to donate and clutter up my text messages anymore. Does anyone know how to get these practices that deter fundraising out of my head? Any thoughts?
I think on both of them, I get a million of these. I think you can put stop. Now, I think to circumvent that, it's all a bot in Bangladesh that goes around it. Understand that. And no good deed goes unpunished. And your name, once you give $10 to Denise in Omaha, everybody else in the world is on top of you. It's not going to change. It's kind of your civic duty to get a gazillion of these useless texts a day. It doesn't cost them anything because, like I say, it's a bot in Bangladesh that does this. But it's just the aggravation we live through at the times. And other than hitting the stop button on your cell, on your text, it may help a little bit. You just got to live with it.
Yeah. You know something, Maria? We'll check on that. Simon CD will remind us, and we'll next week listen to the show, and we'll have an answer on what you can do. I think James may be right. You can push a stop button.
But I think we will check
and see, Maria. So we haven't forgotten.
But it's a question that I go myself, because I get, if for some reason somebody sends the Republicans $10 in my name and I get all the texts from them. And theirs are so different. I want to do a thing on the text. Like, I told you, Patriots, send money now. God damn it, I got 48 hours. I'm going to tell President Trump on you. Democrats, do you realize that there inequality in America? And yeah, it's just the cultural difference between the two. It's just hilarious.
Okay, Maria, no, you're not alone. We love those questions. Keep them coming. If we didn't get to yours this week, we'll try to get to it next week. So thank you very much. Thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, Casper, Hers WL, and Superpower, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them because when you do, it helps make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go and take a look. You can also find other shows you might enjoy on the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. And remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.